Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Tuesday, May the 29th, 2018. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and also over at The Grueling Truth, our friends over at The Grueling Truth, which is part of the iHeart Radio Network. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody had a great Memorial Day. Last time we spoke was on WLIE 540 AM on Sunday night, and quite a bit has gone on. Wild doubleheader for the New York Mets yesterday. And why am I coming to you after Memorial Day? Well, I didn't have a chance to really, and it was an odd weekend, do the podcast because the Mets had the late game, late-ish game against Milwaukee at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Then I had the WLIE appearance, and then there was the doubleheader yesterday. Normally I would have said, okay, Mets play an early game on Monday. I'll do something right after. But then there's the day-night doubleheader, and the second game doesn't start till 10 o'clock. So, and I was a big critic of this. I was like, what the heck is MLB doing? What are the umpires doing? Are the Braves trying to coax a sneaky little five-inning game? Because the weather just looks so bad. The forecast, and they got the game in. And I'm truthfully, I stayed up till the sixth inning. I did watch the highlights of the last few innings this morning, so I'm fully aware that the Mets won game 2-8-5. Watched the first game, glory, and we're here to talk about it. I did have a chance over the weekend to catch up with Michael Mayer, our friend Michael Mayer of Mets Memorized Online, Mets Miners. Prospects 1500, and it was a tough weekend to get a guest because it's holiday weekend. I had the WLIE performance to kind of figure that out. That's not just Mets. And I said, by the time you get this on Tuesday, what could have some meat and potatoes? Because I knew the doubleheader was so important. I know this series against the Braves is so important. So what can I do? Well, Michael was kind enough to spend some time to talk about the farm system because I think that is going to be an important part of everything right now. You saw that yesterday with the doubleheader. The Mets, and right now the starting pitching, the lack of starting pitching depth, I think is becoming an issue. Obviously the bullpen, the shuffle that's going on, what's the right mix? What do the Mets have down there? Not only what do the Mets have down there to help them in 2018, but this is kind of Memorial Day. It's our first check-in point, as I said on Sunday when I was on the radio. It's our first check-in point with the big league clubs. Hey, where's this team at? How do they look? What can they get? Why not do it with the minor league clubs too? Because that's a big part of everything. And you spend the first 5-6 weeks, you really who the big prospects are, who's emerging, Mets required a bunch of relievers at the end of the deadline last year. How are those guys doing? Is there anybody else up that's getting on the radar? Michael talks to scouts. He does great work over at Mets Minors and Mets Memorized Online. So you'll hear that interview. I had a chance to catch up with him late Saturday night. So just keep that in mind. But I don't really think it has a heck of a lot to do with the Mets, because we were talking about the minor league system. Not a heck of a lot has changed in 48 hours. But a lot changed in 48 hours. And look, I said this on Sunday, and I'll say it again. This stretch coming up right after the Brewers series, Braves, Cubs, then you have the Yankees, and then you have some road games against Colorado and Arizona. This is going to be an uncomfortable stretch for this New York Mets club, even if they were completely firing on all cylinders and completely healthy, because this is a tough stretch. You're playing in some environments that aren't very conducive. The Braves, I don't know what the Braves are going to – they certainly are a plucky team, and they certainly are a talented team. But like I've said on Twitter with both the Braves and the Phillies, it's a long season. Talk to me in August. Tell me how they are. Let me see how they go through some of the ebbs and flows of the season, because their valley will come. Everybody's does, as Mets fans have learned after a nice start. And talk to me then. Let's see how they stay strong. You saw some of the good and the bad of the Braves as well over the two games on Memorial Day. So it was going to be uncomfortable. It's doubly going to be uncomfortable because it's critical. Because right now the Mets are kind of hanging in this muck. And believe it or not, as you look at the standings here on Tuesday morning, the 29th, the Braves, the Phillies, and the Nationals are three games ahead of the Mets in the loss column in the National League East. The Cubs and teams like the Cardinals are a couple, 2 to 3 games ahead. So there's this muck, and the Mets are falling to the back of the muck. And that's what I talked about on Sunday. Stay in the muck. Stay with everybody. Get in the tournament. You know, obviously, after you started 11-1, that wasn't the way you wanted things to go. You wanted this to be a team that kind of went out there, won series, stayed at the top of the division, was the cream of the crop. And this stretch this month, at least temporarily, assured us that they are going to be right there with everybody else. You know, they're going to be battling it out in this, what I like to call this wild card division muck, because nobody's jumped forward. You know, the difference between the National League and the American League, if you look, and I mentioned it a little on Sunday on the radio program, is that in the American League you clearly have 2 or 3, 4 teams at the top. You have a couple of teams leading the wild card. Then you have a lot of teams that are really not all that good. Now, you could say that the American League has the best teams in baseball, and that's a fair argument with Houston and the Yankees and the Red Sox right there. But can you also say the National League has more parity? And I've been talking about this for a while, where, you know, teams like the Brewers and the Mets and the Cubs and the Phillies right now and the Braves, all, even if you want to rack and stack them, I don't think there's a big difference despite what the media says. So anyway, the Mets did show me something on Monday, and in a day that I really felt at one point, especially after P.J. Conlon had that tough third inning, that I was going to come on here and really talk about, you know, I was going to go back in history there and look at the NBA and Memorial Day. I mean, there's been some odd Memorial Days that you've experienced here in New York. I always remember the Patrick Ewing 1-point game in the 94 Eastern Conference Finals. I think that happened on Memorial Day weekend. The Lakers getting blown out, Memorial Day Massacre, they called it, by the Boston Red Sox back in the 85 Finals. And you could go on and on and on, and really it's just to have some, I guess, artistic license or fun out there. But it was looking bad, and it was looking like I was going to come on here and really say, look, you know, we're at DepthCon, you know, what, 3 or whatever it may be, and the Mets really need to start getting this going and need to win a ball game. And look, they have a golden opportunity over the next couple of nights with Steven Matz and Noah Syndergaard to make something out of this series, win this series, the very worst split. I'd like to see a team right now, despite the fact that they don't have Cespedes and Frazier, and I think that even though they're scoring runs, plays a lot into how close to the vest they have to play each and every day, which I'll get into in a minute, is part of the reason why I think everyone's so frustrated with this team. You know, even without those guys, I think you have to go out there and try to put the hammer down. You got to send a message to the Braves. They're very giddy. You know, you get a home run in the first game with a Charlie Culberson. I just felt really lousy about that at bat because Gary Cohen kept talking about how he hasn't hit a home run since 2016. And
And he had hit a long, loud foul strike a couple of pitches before Lugo. Lugo was leaving a lot of pitches up in that ninth. And, you know, you see the Culberson home run, and you're like, nothing goes right. Nothing goes right. And then they got P.J. Conlon in the second game, and you're like, there's no way he's going to be able to navigate this plucky Braves lineup. It's a solid lineup. They got a lot of guys that come after you. They're a little like the Kansas City Royals, the kind of approach they have from a couple of years ago. You know, guys that make a lot of contact, come after you, a lot of energy. And that's the thing. The Mets are going to have to match the energy of a team like the Braves and the Phillies. And with Murphy coming back in Washington, we'll see how that thing continues to develop. But the thing I was going to say is because the Mets and DeGrom with his 11 starts where he's 5-6, not him, but the team is 5-6, falls right into this, is that they really don't have those tack-in runs. You see the first inning, they score a run. They don't get 2-3 runs. You even saw it in the second game early on. Now, there was a little bit of bad luck where Reyes lined the ball down the line that was basically an inch foul. I think it was the third inning that would have plated maybe a couple of runs there. But they get a run, they get 2 runs. They don't really have the big inning. And then the times where they do, like on Sunday, the pitching just falls apart. So, you know, that's where when you get Cespedes and Frazier back, you hope that that changes. Because I like Jose Bautista. I think he could be a good component player. I think you're starting to see some of the guys. Adrian Gonzalez has been hitting all along. You go up and down here. You know, Conforto's coming around. You know, you got Brandon Nimmo has been everything you could ask out of a leadoff hitter. Devin Mesoraco with another big home run yesterday. I think Kevin Plawicki is going to be a huge upgrade offensively over Thomas Nitto. Nitto, I always say these guys, some of these guys' names wrong. So I'm not really worried about the offense. I know Flores went down, but let's face it, Flores to me, if he doesn't play first base and he doesn't hit lefties at a high level, which he really wasn't doing, I'm not sure there's a lot of value for him on the roster because he's a horrible defensive player. He really is. How can I forget Cabrera and the season he's had, which he's probably playing a little bit over his head, and that's going to come back down to earth. But when that does, you know, you hope that you see Cespedes and Frazier and Conforto kind of ascend, and then he levels out Cabrera a little bit. And let's not forget Rosario with the 3 RBI night, and he's starting to swing the bat a little bit. And I made the comparison last week, and I think a lot of people watch as he plays. I'm not going to say he's this kind of hitter. Will develop into this kind of hitter, but he has a little bit of a Alfonso Soriano in that swing. So, but the problem right now is you have a team that I think because they don't have two key components of the lineup, and because the lineup, even though they quote unquote have depth, there's a real drop off. And when you have you go from Frazier to Jose Reyes at third base, when you don't have Adrian Gonzalez, who's had actually a halfway decent year, league average, but a halfway decent year. You kind of go out there and, Jay Bruce defensively is not at the same caliber. And Jay Bruce has been bad. I mean, Jay Bruce, I don't know if it's the plantar fasciitis. Maybe he got the big contract and he's trying to live up to that. There's a lot of factors there, but Jay Bruce has been bad. And that's something that when Cespedes comes back, will be interesting to see how they address. So they play close to the vest. Bad things are going to happen. Like you saw with Lugo, you couldn't get that extra run or that extra insurance run. And, I saw a lot of anger after the first game. I mean, I know that during this bad stretch, I believe the Mets have been 8-16 going into the second game of the doubleheader after a 17-9 start. So they've been pretty bad. There's the mocking of Callaway and the anger and let's fire Callaway. You even got people talking about bringing Terry Collins back. I mean, come on. Here's what I'll continue to tell you about Callaway. And You I'm not saying I agree with every move he's made, but yesterday he went in to this doubleheader with a plan. And that plan was to have Familia pitch one game and Lugo pitch another game. And then if they didn't get the full 7 innings out of DeGrom, they were going to mix and match. It's a very rigid plan. He did not. And actually, I believe it was Kevin Kernan wrote about this in the New York Post, where one of the learning curves that Callaway may have to, may have to have a little bit here is starting to look at situations, taking his plan on paper and adjusting, because the eye showed you yesterday that Lugo really didn't have it in that ninth inning. I mean, when Swanson hit that liner, that he just missed lining a ball into the gap, you probably had to take a look and say, okay, you know, he doesn't have it right now. What do we do here? And I really think you needed that first game. Yes, you don't want to just throw everything in the kitchen sink, bring Familia in, and what happens if he gets a bad hop and blows a save, which he blew a save a week earlier against the Marlins. And then now you used all your bullets, for lack of a better word, and now you're going into the second game. But the plan, which I found surprising, is you never want to punt on a game, but with P.J. Conlon starting the second game, the threat of rain, the game might even be getting rained out, a 10 o'clock start, nothing was in the favor of the Mets. So you look at your plan and you say, how can I adjust? And Callaway really hasn't done that. The funny part is Terry Collins had no plan. Dan Worthen had no plan. They just went out there and they kind of just, okay, let's see where this thing goes. There's at least a structure and a plan here with this guy. And maybe the rigid nature of it is what bothers you, but I'll take that. I really will take that. You know, the other part of this, how the players play for him and how he manages his clubhouse, well, you got a positive sign here in game two. And the thing that I'm looking for about this club that was missing last year, and even to a certain degree in 2016, even though they made the playoffs, is are they going to just lay down and let this thing slip away because it's getting hard and because things aren't going their way? When a guy that has not hit a home run in 2 years beats you, and he beat you because he's a big league hitter and because Lugo threw one, left one out over the plate. I mean, that's going to happen. I mean, these are big league hitters. You know, they could have easily packed in that second game. Easily. You know, Conlon gets clocked. And believe it or not, a guy who I don't care a lot for, Hansel Robles, turns out to be a really key component to winning game two. They grind that one out. What you saw in game two was that grinded out win that this team needed. This team needs to do more often. And that's how they're going to keep themselves in this muck and move to the front of this wild card division mess and be there all year. Because if they don't, they can't sit around and just say they're going to wait for Cespedes and Frazier. And I'm not suggesting that, because that's the kind of nonsense that they would have done in the Collins. Well, we're a second-half club, and they got to do it now. They got to start now. They got two very winnable games. They got two winnable games against the Braves. It's not going to be easy. You have Matz, who's coming around. You have Syndergaard. And I know that the Braves seem to, you know, have figured him out. And other teams are starting to figure him out a little bit with, you know, zoning in on the fastball, but they need to jump on this now. They can't just keep losing 3, 4, 5 out of 6. They can't win 3 in a row, lose 3 in a row. They got to start making some progress here. They have to take something really positive away from that second game and say, okay, we stabilized this thing. This thing was getting ugly. They had lost 4 in a row. They had lost some heartbreaking games, and that's part of it. I don't buy into what a lot of people will say where, well, the next day's pitcher could wipe out a bad loss. It can for a few innings, but when that bullpen, which has struggled, comes in, you're not going to tell me that's not in the back of everyone's mind. The minute somebody gets on base, like, oh, here we go again. That's why anybody who talks about bullpenning and how throwing a pitcher in the first inning versus the ninth inning, it's just the same thing, and then statistically it helps out because, you know, it's a half a run or whatever the hell more data they have that teams will score early in the game versus late in the game. Well, the reason they score less late in the game is because the odds are at stake, the stakes are higher, you're a little bit more pressure, and yeah, there's a reason why that happens. It's not just by accident. So you can't flip that script by just changing the pitcher, because it's still going to be the same thing. The stakes are higher, the pressure's on. If you fail in a late game at bat, it's a lot different than when you leave the bases low in the first inning. Hurts, and I know everything in a vacuum looks the same, but you know, that it's not the same, and that's the case. So anyway, my message here before we get to Michael Mayer, and I do want to hear a little bit of what he has to say because depth, let's talk about this current team, is going to be a big part of it. My message here is this. The Mets have the help coming. It looks like both at least Frazier will be back by Monday, and Cespedes shouldn't be back much later after that. Hopefully they're healthy. Hopefully they stay healthy. That will add a ton of length to this lineup. And I think they're going to be okay offensively. They were just so bad. I mean, everybody's so historically below their norms. Do I have some concerns about them against lefties? Sure. It seems like soft tossers and breaking ball pitchers really bother them. That's something to keep an eye out for. know, maybe part of that is the approach where they're very patient and against pitchers where they should maybe wait till late in the count. They're waiting till late in the count, but that's a whole separate story, whole separate examination for another day. So big win, second win of the doubleheader. A lot of work to do. I think, listen, my thing is this. I'm not going to cry and complain. I'll leave you with this. I'm not going to cry and complain if they split the next couple of games. They certainly can't lose both of them. But it really would show me a lot if they could take the next two games and really wipe away the stench of that first game of the doubleheader and go into the Cubs series, a big weekend series, four-game series, and really go there on a high, having won a big second game of the doubleheader in adverse conditions, and then win two more from the Braves and put them back on their heels a little bit. They're too giddy right now. But anyway, that's where we're at. So let's sit back, take a quick break. When we return, you'll hear my conversation with Michael Mayer from this past weekend as we look at the Mets farm system and do our first check-in on how everybody's doing and some of the top prospects and what kind of help the Mets could expect in both the near and the long term. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and also The Grueling Truth over at the iHeart Radio Network. We'll be back with more Talking Mets podcast right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
We're back. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. And it's a great time to start checking into the Mets minor league system, see what's going on. We're about 8 weeks into the minor league season, and especially after the loss earlier today, I know that everyone's going to want to hear what kind of pitching options the Mets have over in the minor league levels. Joining me, Michael Mayer, Metsmerized Online, Mets Minors, and who better to talk about this kind of stuff. Mike, welcome to the program. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me aboard.
All right, so the big question everyone's going to have after this dreadful loss earlier today, Mets giving up 17 runs, doubleheader coming in on Memorial Day on Monday. What kind of arms do the Mets have here? It's getting rough on those Jason Vargas starts, and you know they're going to need to shuttle some other arms at some point. So you have anything in the minors? Do you have any good news for Mets fans out there listening?
There's not a ton of good news because Corey Oswalt was put on the DL yesterday with a lat issue. So he was kind of one of the guys they were figuring for Monday and beyond. If you were thinking about bumping Vargas, Oswalt was probably the top candidate. He pitched well in limited major league time, and he pitched good in spring. He pitched very good for the Mets this spring, and I definitely think he was a guy who was probably going to throw some innings Monday, and down the road, we'll see how how big this injury is, if it's a long-term thing or not, but that's definitely a big hit because he was the next starter in line, and then we saw Flexen today, and I know Flexen struggled, but you have to remember Flexen hadn't pitched in 12 days for whatever reason. We can get more into that later if we want to talk about Callaway and how he's used the bullpen recently. But Flexen has pitched well this year. He's looked better than he had last year. he's a long-term option. Obviously, he's not an option for Monday now after pitching today. The guy I think we'll probably see on Monday is PJ Conlon. He's actually lined up. That's when his next scheduled start was for Vegas. So, and he's on the 40 man. So I think he's the guy we see Monday, try to give them at least, I mean, 3 or 4 innings. He looked solid through his first time through the order when he pitched against the Reds in his major league debut. And I think he can be that guy that gives you 3 or 4 solid innings. Beyond that, one of my favorite pitching prospects for the Mets in the upper minors is Nabil Chrismont. He's having a good year at Double A. Doesn't throw hard, tops out like 91, but he's got a plus-plus changeup, throws a ton of strikes, and he's done well against some tough lineups this year. So, I mean, between Chrismont and Conlon, I think those are the two next guys we'd be looking at after Oswalt's injury and Flexen not being able to go after pitching today.
Mike Mayer joining us. You can check him out at MetsMorized Online, Mets Miners. He's also part of Prospects 1500. And you mentioned a bunch of those names. And, you know, go back. Actually, I'm on Prospects 1500. You contributed to the top 50 prospects for the Mets, and you guys put them into multiple tiers, with tier one being, you know, high-level players. You know, we'll get into the bullpen and stuff like that, like you said. But, you know, 8 weeks in, I guess Peter Alonso would be that name that I see popping into that tier one. You had nobody that you thought would be tier one, all-star level kind of player. That's what you guys put tier one. Tier two, the Mets had a number of players, Flexen being one of those that you mentioned just before, with above average, you know, solid contributor type of players. But has that changed now? We're Memorial Day. Has anything changed in your eyes where maybe the Mets have a tier one or one or two players that are leaning or pointing towards that tier one and being more of an impact type of player?
Well, I think the Mets fans have gotten some good news in that regard. I mean, about half hour before I got on the phone with you, Peter Alonso just hit another home run, a 2-run game winner in the 8th inning to give him 14 on the season, which ties him for the minor league lead right now, I believe. So, depending on who you talk to, Keith Law said when he updates his top 100 that Alonso will most likely be in it. And some other guys, I know a writer from Baseball Prospectus has mentioned that he could see him even creeping into the top 50 prospects in baseball. So I think Alonso is definitely he's a tier one guy now. And the Mets have an interesting issue with him because they have to figure out what to do. We can talk about that more later too, because I want to talk about Andrés Giménez, who for me is another tier one guy. He's still only 19 and playing in the Florida State League, and he's hitting almost 300 right now and second in the league in stolen bases and playing a great shortstop. And I know one people don't see when they see him, they don't see a lot of flash, but when I talk to coaches from last year to this year, it's a lot of his skill set is on instincts. They've never seen 18, 19-year-old kid have the instincts that he has, not just on defense, but offense, base running. He is he's the Mets' top prospect, according to most people, and he was in a couple of top 100 season, Baseball America's top 100 right now. So I definitely think he's a guy to keep an eye on too. And
he could be
David
a tier
Peterson.
One. And you mentioned though, you know, the instincts. Before we get to Peterson, you mentioned the instincts. That's an interesting point because John Harper was talking to Tim Nehring, and they were comparing, I guess, Gleyber Torres to Rosario, and Torres, the feedback that he's gotten, we've obviously seen that in a small sample size of his brief time with the Yankees, is that he sees the game in a way that you can't teach, whereas Rosario's learning the game. It sounds like Giménez has some of those instincts. Maybe I'm not comparing him to Torres, of course, but in the Mets are looking at him in the same vein as maybe the Yankees looked at Torres when he was going up through the system.
Oh no, I totally understand that. Because they both play shortstop, they're both super young at the levels that they played at. You already get people asking about and comparing Jimenez and Rosario. And while I don't think Jimenez has probably the all around ceiling that Rosario has, he's different in the sense that he's more polished than Rosario was at that age. Like I said, the instincts, just the small things that come into play that, like you said, we've seen with Rosario, whether it's him being very fast but not a great base runner. That's something with Jimenez. Jimenez isn't as fast as Rosario, but he's already stolen more bases than Rosario did in the minor leagues at that time. So it's one of those things, like you said, where instincts do come into play, and it's rare for a 19-year-old to have what Jimenez has on the field, and it makes it easier for the coaching, and it makes it easier to work on certain things like plate discipline and stuff on defense. So I think that's a big step. That's a big thing for Jimenez going forward, that he has a step up on some younger guys that don't at that same age.
David Peterson, Justin Dunn, Anthony Kay, these are names, pitching prospects that we've heard before for various reasons. Maybe fans and maybe pundits have soured on them a little bit. Each is having an interesting year so far. And again, I'm not trying to say that the Mets farm system that has been criticized or been described as somewhat barren is, upper echelon, but maybe it's not as bad as we think. And you could always use starting pitching. You could always use starting pitching depth. We just talked about it. They need it for Monday. I'm not saying those guys are going to help them on Monday, but maybe there's some hope that you could get those 3, 4, 5 starters. I'm not talking about them being number ones or number twos, Syndergaard, DeGrom types, but is there some hope? Are you seeing some positives where these could be contributing solid mid to back end of the rotation starters in the near future, the next 2 years maybe perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. And specifically with Peterson and Kay, like you mentioned, Peterson, his last three starts has gone 7 innings each start, which, I mean, obviously that's a pretty big deal these days when that's just, I mean, major league level, even that's unheard of. And he's only given up 2 earned runs in that span. So he's got a 1.91 ERA for Columbia. First round pick last year. He's not your typical, I mean, he's not a big overpowering guy. He's 92, 93 with his fastball, good breaking ball, good command, and gets a ton of ground balls. So, I mean, like before the season even started, Keith Law was talking about him. He's the type of guy that could finish in Double A this year, and I completely agree with that. Whether he does or not is up to the Mets, obviously, but I see him in the next month definitely getting promoted to Port St. Lucie Mets, and then a couple of starts that you go from there, he could absolutely finish in Double A. So that's kind of what the Mets had in mind when they drafted him. They thought he was going to be a fast mover, so that's definitely something to look out for and be hopeful for how well he's pitching. And Kay's another guy. He pitched 7 innings tonight, only gave up an earned run and 8 punch outs. So he had a couple of rough games, but overall he's been good this year. And he's another guy that I think he's a pretty polished pitcher again. So I think he's another guy that definitely finishes the year in St. Lucie and could even be in Double A. So, and Dunn, while he's been better this year, and I think he'll end up in the season Binghamton too. So you have 3 guys right there that are going to be in St. Lucie, Binghamton at the end of the year. That, while like you said, maybe none of those guys are aces, but I mean, you're definitely probably going to find a 3 in there, and maybe a 4 and a 5 too, which as we've seen with the Mets this year is it's tough to find, and it's something that it's a big need if you want to be a contender.
Yeah, you need those guys, even 6, 7, 8, I mean, at this point. And
you know, it's gotten to the point where you may have to put Seth Lugo in the rotation. Speaking of the bullpen, we talked about that earlier. They made a number of deals for relievers last year. We saw Jacob Rehm so far this year a little bit. Drew Smith is down there. Ryan Rider in the lower levels of the minors. Eric Hanheld is in Binghamton. There's some interesting arms out of that group. Anybody that could help them now? Is there anybody that's standing out from that group? Because their numbers are generally pretty good out of all those guys. I mean, even Gershon Bautista, we saw a little bit of him. I know he struggled, but you know, obviously has an electric arm. So the Mets might have a few arms where the struggles of a Ramos or potentially Lugo going to the rotation, as damaging as that is to the bullpen, maybe they could, you know, push one of those guys in. And you know, are there other names, other bullpen arms in either Vegas or Binghamton that could help immediately that you're looking at?
Definitely. Drew Smith has been throwing the ball very well recently for Vegas, and he's not on the 40-man, but they give a little bit of wiggle room there where they can make a spot if need be. I mean, there's obviously a couple players you could think about designating right now. But Smith, who they got in the Lucas Duda trade, has been pitching very well this year. He had a rough spell to start for Vegas, but I mean, that's not unheard of. So I mean, if he's definitely one of the first guys, I know Tim Peterson's been mentioned recently, another right-handed reliever, 50 from the 51s. He's an older guy. He's been in the system for a while. Some similarities, I guess. You would go to Chase and Bradford, who came up and had some success last year, because Peterson, he doesn't throw hard. He's 91, 92, but he has a good curveball. And keeps the ball down, keeps the ball in the park.
Pretty high strikeout rate. Pretty high strikeout rate, too, for that, right?
Yeah, 40 strikeouts in 26 innings this year in the Pacific Coast League for a guy that doesn't throw 95 is extremely impressive, obviously. So I think, I mean, at some point, like Bradford, whether they were ever highly thought of or throw a big fastball, at some point you still got to get your look. So I think he's a guy that likely gets a look soon. Tyler Bachelor, a hard thrower that we saw a little bit in spring as well. Unfortunately, he just went on the DL today. But actually talked to him myself, and it seems like it's just a minor issue. So he could be back soon. And he's on the 40-man roster. So he's someone I think we see in the next month or so. And Eric Hanheld that you mentioned, I mean – no one knew much about him at all when the Mets got him for play to be named later in the Neil Walker deal. But I actually got a chance to see him in person last month, and he's impressive. He's a tall guy, 6'6", throws a sinker. The game I was at, they had a sinker a couple of pitches at 97 and had some late movement on it. So, and mixes in a slider. He got another save for Binghamton today. He's got 7 for them with an ERA under 3, and he's striking out a ton of guys. So I think he's definitely a guy that we could see later this year too from those trades last year.
You had talked about when we over the offseason, and we talked about last year, there was some concerns about the Mets at various levels and player development, and they shook things up, new AAA manager. I know they were looking at the process up and down the organization. Compare the player development part of the organization this year so far to last year. Have you heard anything? Has there been positive changes? I know Frank Viola's in Binghamton now. You know, what do you see? Anything differently, or is that much to do about nothing?
No, I definitely think there were some concerns, is the way I would put it. And I think some of the changes they made between Tony DeFrancisco coming over from the Astros system to coach AAA, Binghamton bringing in a bench coach, Lopez going back down to single A. I think there has been just a more sound structure this year of kind of keeping some of the off-the-field stuff in line, and some of the in-dugout stuff with some player issues that they've had. A couple of them are no longer in the Mets system, but I think overall, it's shown too. I mean, there's been some more success this year, but I think overall it's just been a better structured system, and I think that'll help. Maybe we don't see it just in the short term. It's tough to see a quick rollover on some stuff like that, but everyone I've talked to, it seems like it's just a better running system overall, and that's obviously good going forward. I know Terry Collins has been out watching a bunch of games. He was just down in St. Lucie this week watching Justin Dunn, who we talked about earlier, trying to get him to get a look at some of these minor league arms. And so I think overall it's been a much better season in that regard of just developing the younger guys.
It's a good role for Terry too. You know, I wasn't a big fan of Terry, especially with his bullpen management as a manager, but I think, and that's where he was before he was hired to be the Mets manager, being that roving minor league guy, you know, helping the front office and keeping an eye on things. I think that's a good role for Terry. I think he's found a nice little niche, probably where he should have been all along, but I understand that there were other factors there with him becoming the manager, but it seems like he's a big help in that role.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard nothing but positive from players and the coaches and stuff. I think it's just a natural fit for him, and that was kind of where he was meant to be all along, honestly. So I think with him, he was with Phil Reagan at the game the other day. I think that's a good spot for those two guys together to kind of just focus on making sure these guys are ready and who comes up that's ready and stuff like that. So yeah, I think that was, I know a lot of people kind of scoffed at first that the Mets were keeping him in the organization, but I think it was a good idea and ultimately a good fit for him.
One of the players recently that has been a positive in the player development of the Mets and one of the first Mets draft picks on the Sandy Alderson regime is Brandon Nimmo. And, you know, I've never been a huge fan of Nimmo. I thought he was a guy, especially when he first came up, took too many pitches, was too passive, especially in spots where runners on base. He just, you know, with Jose Fernandez and Corey Sager, you always kept saying, why this guy? Why do they take this project on? But, you know, here he is. I'm not going to get crazy about him having a higher on-base percentage than Mike Trout. That's cute coming into today, but, you know, let's calm down. But to me, he can be an offensive outfield version of maybe Ben Zobrist. Is that fair? That kind of player? Is that with that power, the on-base? I mean, Ben Zobrist is versatile, plays a bunch of positions. I'm not saying that Nimmo will do that, but, you know, maybe that's a good comp offensively. And if that's the case, that's a pretty solid player at the top of your lineup. And you know, he might even be a bigger on-base machine than Ben Zobrist. He's a guy that could be a 42-43% on-base guy and constantly be a positive, even when he's not hitting.
Yeah, I'm not a comp guy. I try to stay away from that. But one guy I always mentioned with Nimmo was Nick Markakis. And that just seemed like a natural fit for me as a guy who gets on base, isn't a big home run guy, but still put up a lot of doubles and had decent speed. So I think that's the type of player that Nimmo definitely can be. And Markakis has been valuable for a bunch of years for a bunch of teams. So I think Nimmo is pretty obviously he's leading the Mets offense right now. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He's the best offensive player. And they're going to have to find a way. There's no way you can take him out of the lineup right now. And getting back to him being the first pick of the Sandy Alderson regime is interesting because people labeled him as a bust before he even got to the major leagues. They're calling a lot of people are calling Alderson and his group, Chad McDonald, the guy, one of the guys that had a lot to do with Nimmo coming to the Mets, calling him crazy for drafting a kid that didn't even play high school baseball. So I think now is the time you kind of have to give McDonald, Alderson, and the Met scouting department, as well as player development, to pushing a guy like this through the minor leagues all that time and turning him into a, so far he's been a very solid offensive player. And even this year, he's looked better defensively in the outfield. He's a key cog for this team right now, and it'll be interesting to see when Cespedes comes back exactly what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be interesting. And I mean, it puts a situation where Jay Bruce, who has not been at all the Jay Bruce that you thought you were getting, he might be going to the bench. And in some ways, I know that this is crazy. You and I talking about this, Adrian Gonzalez right now might be a better offensive player than Bruce. I'm not saying that'll last the whole year. I mean, that's the thing about the Mets. They have a lot of players that, you know, they have this quote unquote depth, but nobody's really living up to their career norms. That's the frustrating part. I mean, even if they were at their lower end of their career norms, it would make a big difference. Everybody's at some place significantly below, that includes Conforto, what their career norm would be. And from what it sounds like, you know, you don't have a ton of help now on the way that could help you in the next couple of weeks, but it's not as, and I guess this is where I'm going as we get to the back half of this segment, it's not this desolate, you know, situation where it's like you got to tear it down, there's nothing here, and rip it down to the studs. I mean, I think there's still stuff here with obviously free agent investment, trades, things like that, that this could be a team that at least can be competitive and compete for, you know, I think a second wild card in the next couple of years. I don't see it as a team that's going to be completely barren. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think coming into this year, I know a lot of people are down in the system, that a lot of places had them ranked anywhere from like 25th to 28th. And I mean, that was fair given what they had in the system and who were prospects. But also, like I said before, it kind of depended on, before the season, I said that it depends on what Peterson, Kay, Dunn, guys like that do. And all three of those guys have pitched well enough to give, just in prospect break rankings, the Mets a pretty significant boost. And I mean, Alonso breaking out, he was highly regarded, but not anywhere near the sense that he is now. And Jimenez is definitely a top 100 guy now. They have the sixth overall pick in a couple of weeks. They signed two of the top international free agents last year. So, I mean, this is a system that I would guess is probably like 20, 21, 22 in that range now. And it can get better with a good pick and some of the two international free agent guys playing this year. They're also lined up to sign two more top international guys this year. And then to get to the point, Nimmo, he's a young cornerstone guy. Rosario, I know he's had some struggles.
You think that highly of Nimmo. You think Nimmo's a keeper. You don't think he's just a component player. You think he could be a cornerstone guy for this offense?
I think for me now, and I've been kind of a guy that's been weary of him too because of his lack of power / does he fit in center field defensively. I think at this point he's proven that he's a major league starting outfielder.
That's
obviously a big key, and a leadoff guy. I mean, that's something the Mets have been searching for a long time. I mean, Granderson had his periods there, but it wasn't exactly a perfect fit for him. I think Nimmo is the perfect fit for the Mets as a leadoff hitter for the next however, 4, 5, 6, 7, how many ever years. I think that's his spot now. And that brings you to what you were kind of talking about with the Bruce dilemma. He's been much worse offensively than Adrian Gonzalez, which is scary to think about. And Conforto's now homered in two straight games. So Conforto's waking up, Nimmo's playing well, and Cespedes comes back. I mean,
Bruce is on the bench.
The other option.
Bruce is on the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other option was putting Bruce at first, but how can you play Bruce at first over Gonzalez now? Because he's obviously a downgrade defensively.
Right.
So you would need him to be better offensively, and he hasn't been. So I don't.
Right.
Obviously, he's got a bunch of time left on his deal that he just signed. But in, say, 3 weeks from now, when Cespedes is back and the Mets are still three games out of playoff spot, how much can you worry about contracts then and ignore putting the better players on the field?
Funny, we went through this segment. We haven't mentioned Dom Smith at all. Dom Smith played a little outfield last week. He had a couple at-bats and looked putrid, but only a couple at-bats in Philadelphia. One at-bat, maybe it was. Whatever he's got. I don't know. Is that more us just like overlooking him because of Alonso? I wasn't overly impressed last year. He's lost a ton of weight. I mean, I was amazed when I saw him in Philadelphia. What about Dom Smith?
Yeah,
what do we have left there?
It's a conundrum. It's tough because, like you said, I mean, he looked great in spring, and then watching him in Vegas this year, I mean, the whispers are always like, well, because he's had a couple of years where he came in and looked good in spring. He's just going to gain it back during the year. He's going to gain it back during the year. And he didn't. He's lost more weight. I mean, he looks fantastic. I mean, fantastic enough that with the Mets losing some outfield depth, that they put him in the outfield, then he's it's tough in a small game span to get a good level of a guy, especially the AAA cameras are awful to watch the games in the minors, but he looked okay. I mean, he hasn't had any Daniel Murphy, Lucas Duda type plays out in the outfield yet, and he's got a good arm. He pitched in high school. He actually did play some right field in high school, so it's not a completely new position for him. So he does have some experience there. And he's walking more this year. He's walking a ton this year, but now the power's gone. So it's what do you do with the first? We're back to Dom Smith without the power. He had the power before,
that's not a good place to be for him. Dom Smith
I mean. So, I mean, your thing is he obviously changed his approach to not be so aggressive at the plate. He's taking some more pitches. He's walking more, which he didn't walk much last year. So him walking more is a good thing. But now we're falling into is the lack of power. Is that just him taking too many pitches, or is that him losing too much weight behind the ball? I think you kind of have to give it more time with him. And now you're putting him in the outfield. So that's something new for him too. So he's got a lot going on for a kid that we found out with him being late to a meeting, and we found out that wasn't the first time. He had done it a couple times last year. So we found out that there's some maturity things there too. So he's still a young kid. He's still only 22, 23. So that's a lot to put on a kid. But ultimately, I think we're getting to the point where the Mets have to make a decision. They have to make a decision between him and Alonso. If the Mets are buyers at the deadline, Alonso and Smith, you can't have both of them. You just can't. They're two first basemen that are close to the major leagues, so you got to kind of choose one. And
just like they did with Ike Davis and Duda, you have to choose one.
Yep.
They chose Duda.
Yep.
Chose Wright.
And I think at this point you have to choose. Obviously, that was done after getting to see both at the major league level. But I think I don't think you can wait in this scenario, just because I think now would be the time. Even if his power numbers are down a little bit with Smith, if you decide to trade him, I think now's the time with him. Teams would have to be somewhat happy to see that he's stayed in fantastic shape, so that might prop up his value a little bit. So I think if I'm Alderson and we're buying at the deadline, Smith to me is on the chopping block. He's someone that I would be willing to deal.
Last thing, Michael, you mentioned Mickey Callaway's handling the bullpen. I really have not been bothered by Callaway. I mean, again, we're 8 weeks in, 10 weeks into. I mean, if you don't count spring training into his tenure as manager, I think he does a better job than Terry Collins. That's not a high bar. I think the way that Gazelman and Lugo have been, you know, matriculated into that position, I think that I don't know if that would have happened under Terry Collins and Dan Worthen, and they certainly have had success. I know that, you know, there's been some struggles with A.J. Ramos, and there's been some questions about the use of Blevins. But Blevins hasn't been good. I'm not really overly bothered by Callaway. I'm not saying that I agreed with everything, but I don't see anything that's egregious. And the things that have blown up in his face, you can make arguments against one way or the other. What are your thoughts on that?
It's tough. We can use last night, for example, when he took out Gazelman to bring in Blevins and then ultimately took out Blevins to bring in Ramos. Historically, that's not a bad move. Neither of those
right.
are bad moves. For Blevins to come in and get that lefty and then for him to fail, then you bring in Ramos, the former closer, former late-inning guy for the Marlins, who that's the reason you got him. So historically, it's not as bad, but then you look at this year, and Gazelman's been one of the best Mets' best relievers. Blevins has struggled considerably against lefties, and Ramos has just struggled overall. So I think that's the type of situation where he should have trusted Gazelman and went with him. And I was kind of surprised that he didn't, given the trust that he has put in him and Lugo this year. So that's a tough one to go strongly on either side, I think. I think I would have stuck with Gazelman, and that's ultimately what he should have done. But Blevins is also – that's the reason Blevins is on this team, and Blevins has been very good at doing that exact thing and getting the lefties out. Blevins and Ramos have kind of put Callaway in a tight spot because both of them guys were supposed to be integral parts of the bullpen, and they just haven't pitched like it. So that puts the manager into a tougher spot when it comes to making those type of decisions in the bullpen. Still, there's a couple other ones that I don't understand. Using Lugo for a couple innings and a blowout last week, not getting Flexen an inning in the last week or so. Oswalt was here for a while and didn't get into a game, but warmed up a couple of times. A couple of things like that I think in the bullpen that he could have let Lugo just sit out a couple of games or get some other guys an inning here or there to kind of bring down the workload in Lugo and Gazelman.
So basically a little bit of a learning curve on that point. I could understand that.
Well, yeah.
Hey, so,
and
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And there's going to be a learning curve with Callaway. I know most of us fell in love with him just for his simple demeanor and the things that he said during spring, and which is fine and good, but he has little to no managerial experience. So there's going to be a learning curve for him. And unfortunately we're seeing that a little bit, but I still think in the long run that the Mets made the right move in bringing him in. And we're just going to have to go through some growing pains in the time being.
Well, absolutely. Michael, so what do you have coming up? What's going on? I know you're on Metsmerized Online, Mets Minors. The draft is coming up. That's a big thing. You know, a lot of rumors right now. I don't really look at the mocks because I don't think anybody really knows exactly what these teams are going to do. What do you got coming up over the next couple of weeks for the listeners to follow and get used to?
Definitely the draft. Mets being at the sixth pick is obviously a big deal. Got a chance to get some elite talent there. And the one name that seems to be coming up for a lot of people is Florida third baseman, another Florida first round high pick. That's where they took Alonzo. Jonathan India, third baseman from Florida. I mean, like you said, you can't put a whole lot of stock in the mocks, but just about all of them have him as if not going there, a top option. And I watched him play the other day, and athletic third baseman with power, hits for average, gets on base. Even he's got like 11 steals this year too. Made a couple of terrific plays over at third. There's even talk that he can play shortstop a little bit. He can play second if you need to put him over there. But really like him. And Travis Swaggerty, outfielder from South Alabama, is another one they talked about. I just know that they're going to look for a college hitter that's a good athlete. I think that's what they're focusing on right now. And between Indy and Swaggerty, I think they have two pretty good options there. And it'll be exciting to see just who they end up with.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you were generous with your time. Always enjoy catching up. That's our first checkpoint of the minor league season. And I know we'll chat again as the year goes on. Be well, my friend, okay?
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
And that's Michael Mayer. Always enjoy catching up with him, and hope you enjoyed it. And some interesting stuff there. And like I said, I think looking at the biggest thing that concerns me in the near term, and it'll be interesting how some of these young pitchers that we named, who I don't think are going to help this year, is how are the Mets doing on the developmental portion? Because not everybody you draft, no one you draft really is a finished product. And when you see teams like the Yankees and even the Cubs and what the Braves are doing, the Braves are also importing players from other organizations and bringing them here. You know, you saw that with a couple of relievers like a Carl and things like that. And they're doing well. Is how is your player development? How is that? And I think that's important at the big league level. That's why you have Island and Callaway there. And I know they shuffled the minor league levels a little bit. How is that? Because if you don't develop these guys, you run into situations like the Mets have where, to be frank, the depth of starting pitching is a big problem. It's a problem already at the big league level. On a normal five-man rotation basis, it's going to be even worse when, you know, they dive into six, seven, eight. Because Gesellman and Lugo, who were their sixes and sevens, and good ones, are now really necessary components of the bullpen. So anyway, interesting stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. Of course, I'll be back next week. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Enjoy your week back to work after a long holiday weekend. Want to thank Michael Mayer. Want to thank the good folks over at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Of course, you can check me out on iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Also, check me out over at The Grueling Truth, part of the iHeart Media Network. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. Tweet me at Mike Silva Media if you want to chat about the Mets this week, as always. Till next time, take care.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.